third grade girls basketball game. My wife and I are at Red Bank Middle School right there in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We had played 19 minutes and 40 seconds of basketball. My twin daughters, I feel for the guy who's having twins. My twin daughters were playing 19 and 40 seconds of basketball. The score is tied 4-4. It was a barn burner. There had been at least 1,000 jump balls if you've ever been to an elementary basketball game. It's our ball. We inbound. We're at the opposite end of our basket. We dribble down. We shoot. We obviously miss. It's why the score is 4-4. And the ball goes out of bounds. Our coach calls a play. Here's why our coach calls a play, because he's a moron. Anybody calling plays at second and third grade? No, the girls don't care. They just want to go to Chick-fil-A afterwards. So we call a play. We inbound it. We shoot again. We obviously miss. The best player in the entire league, the best athlete, the best basketball player in the entire league. Some of you would probably even know her name if I said it, because you're that person that follows youth sports. She's good at everything. The best person in the entire league, obviously the best person on the court that day, receives that ball, takes one dribble, right back up, off the glass, makes the basket. Here's the problem. Great execution, great energy, great effort. But she shot in the wrong basket. She's in tears. They inbound the ball. We go up 6-4. They inbound the ball. They take a shot. They miss. We win the game. The purpose of today is this: to possibly reassure, to maybe remind, or maybe for the first time to determine, as coaches and leaders, are we shooting in the right basket? Because you can give great effort and you can expend great amounts of energy, but if we're shooting in the wrong basket, we're not giving kids what they deserve.
So you just heard from Heath Esslinger, who is going to be our guest on the podcast the next two episodes. Heath is the former wrestling coach from the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, and now the head of an organization called A Better Way Athletics. And Heath's got a lot of great stuff for us, but in particular, in today's episode, we're going to really be diving into this idea around the struggle and what struggles really matter and how we can support our athletes and our children through that struggle. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin alongside my co-host Nate Sanderson. And every week in 30 minutes or less, we're giving you transformational leadership tools and strategies. This podcast is brought to you by Thrive on Challenge, which provides mentorship for coaches to help them grow as a coach and build their culture. You can learn more at thriveonchallenge.com. You're listening to episode 90, Allowing Athletes to Struggle in the Areas That Matter, with our guest, Heath Esslinger. Before we get into our conversation today with Heath, though, I just want to remind all our listeners out there that if you are enjoying this message that we're giving you on the podcast here on a consistent basis, you can bring that to your organization, your team, or your athletic department. There's going to be a link in the episode details where you can reach out to Nate and I and strike up a conversation about how we can support you in the work that you're doing within your organization. Heath, welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I am really, really excited to have you here today. We had a great conversation about a month ago, which, you know, we have a bit of a shared connection in the fact that, you know, I coached actually in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We've got a common acquaintance and friend in Rocco Mansueto, who I coached with at Notre Dame High School. And so, but actually a month ago was our first time we actually talked, but I'm really, really inspired by the work that you're doing now in the realm of sports. I've always been inspired by the stories and the example that you led with at UTC. So we're really, really excited to have you on the podcast today.
Well, I'm excited to be here. It's great to partner with you as we try to push back on some of this stuff and make a positive difference in the sports world.
Yeah, man. And tell us a little bit about the listeners, about your background as a wrestling coach at University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, and how that story impacted you to lead you to doing the work that you're doing today.
Well, you know, I started out just as a high school coach and then landed the job at Chattanooga. It was never something that I pursued or even dreamed about. It wasn't on my goal sheet, but was presented the opportunity and felt like it was what we needed to do as a family. And it ended up being, you know, just a great decade in our life of being able to coach at the Division I level and really see some things that were missing in the sports world as kids were exiting their last stage of the athletic journey. And it was during that time where I really began to wrestle with this whole idea of and wrestling, you know, obviously is what I did on a daily basis, but really mentally and emotionally wrestle with this whole idea of, man, how do we allow the sports journey in this athletic world to equip young people with the actual tools for them to be successful in real life? Because I was seeing a lot of young men from the age of 18 to 23 that just weren't prepared for real life. They had great skill. They had great training. They were super athletic, but they were a little lost when it came to real life. So I about 8 years ago, I was sitting through a coaching session, a 3D coaching session, and I just thought, man, it's so train wrecked. How do we make a difference? And one of the guys challenged me. He said, Heath, why don't you just start with you? And so 8 years ago, I made a vow. I said, I'm either going to be a part of the problem or a part of the solution. And I chose that day to try to be a part of the solution. And so now 8 years later, I resign as the head coach at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. People think I'm crazy. You're leaving a Division I coaching job to really dive into this full time of how do we impact coaches and parents and put this whole sport idea in perspective and use it for good.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it was a few years ago when I was starting out on my journey of starting to be intentional and starting to work on myself, like you just mentioned there, that I was feeling your impact. And I didn't even know you at the time, right? But your impact through Rocco, who was the wrestling coach and the building where I was at, you know, we would get together and we would have these conversations. Mm-hmm. And I really always felt like Rocco was a bit further on the journey. He had worked with you and stuff. And so I just appreciate your influence there, even if it was indirect. You've had a massive impact on my coaching and even realize it. Now, in the work that you're doing right now, what exactly is that? And how are you, since you've stepped away from coaching, you're trying to be a little bit more intentional in working with coaches and parents out there?
Yeah, well, full time, I'm working with Fellowship of Christian Athletes, you know, really nationally and internationally. I just got back from the Ukraine. And really, my main two roles are coaching development and parent education. And then I've started a company with two other guys, Chad Pike and Eric Phillips, called A Better Way Athletics. And that is, again, it's just a company where we do coaching development and parent education. And really what our goal is just to create momentum in the athletic world to have parents and coaches push back a little. I call it to swim upstream. One of the things I know about you know, when you choose not to swim upstream, the further you go downstream, the swifter the current, the more dangerous the rapids. And right now, I think the stream is just, we're just crushing people. We're going off the waterfall. So I really just want to be a part of joining forces with people like you and people all over the country and around the world to say, hey, it's time to speak a different language. We say we're so sick of these things and athletes, they're entitled and they're apathetic and all these different things. Well, then let's write a different prescription. It's time we write a new prescription because the prescription we're using obviously is not producing or having the effect that we want it to have. So I just want to be a part of that.
Yeah. And one of the things that I've seen recently on one of your videos that you kind of shared on Facebook, I believe was, is talking about the struggle and about how often when it comes to coaching and parenting today, one of the problems is that we're saving kids from the struggle. We're not letting the help teaching them and helping them to embrace that struggle, grow through that. And I guess using your terminology there, the prescription, what's been your prescription in helping coaches to work with athletes around that concept of the struggle?
Well, one of the things is we have to decide which struggle really matters. So I will hear coaches say all the time, well, you know, sport really teaches a kid to struggle. Well, I don't even know if I believe that anymore. I mean, they have $700 worth of gear at 8 years old. That's not a struggle. They're traveling every weekend. That's not a struggle. They're staying at the Marriott. We're treating these, you know, kids like kings and queens at 8 years old. And dude, that's not a struggle. You know, a struggle is going out in your neighborhood and finding 10 people to play and finding bases and enough bats and balls to make it happen. So, you know, I think we've become confused on what struggles really matter. I'm a big believer in what I call organic struggle. So as leaders, we have to allow children to struggle in the areas that matter the most. Hitting a baseball or shooting a basketball or wrestling, it's really not a real struggle because you can take it or leave it. I mean, there's a lot of successful people that have never shot a basketball, wrestled, played baseball or anything. But they're still super successful. So the two areas of struggle that I believe we have to allow children to walk through as leaders centers around these two things. And these are the two that I call organic struggle: sport, academics, band, all that. That's what I call supplemental struggle. And you and I know this, is that supplements can be good, but we can't live on supplements alone. We have to eat real food. So organic struggle centers around two things: relationship and responsibility. So we have to be able to zoom out and take a step back and allow children to struggle in those two areas. Relationally, they have to figure out how to work out things with other humans. That means we have to allow them to speak. We have to allow them to get their feelings hurt. We have to allow them to work out problems. And then the other area is responsibility. We have to allow them to understand that there are certain things they have to do, and there's a time in which they have to do them. So I always joke and say, you know, if your kid's making all-stars but can't make his bed, you're failing as a leader, you know, because making your bed's a responsibility. And I know the one guy made the speech famous, make your bed or whatever, the military. It's a great speech. But, you know, so we have to decide. And the beauty of struggle, here's what I love about struggle, is that struggle is age appropriate. So a six-year-old struggle has a six-year-old consequence. And if we allow a six-year-old relational struggle has a six-year-old relational consequence. Two first graders are mad at each other. A parent doesn't need to get involved. In 2 days, they're going to be best friends again. Mom, chill out, back up, coach, get out of the way. You know? And then the second area is a six-year-old responsibility has a six-year-old consequence. If you don't turn in your project in first grade, no one ever sees it on your transcript. No one looks at your first grade transcript. So really those years of being a child, we should be looking for ways to allow our children to struggle, because what struggle does is it builds our resiliency tank. And they begin to see, hey, I can get through this. No one's going to bail me out. Because unfortunately, if you bail them out of all their relational issues and all their responsibility at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, then when they get to their high school coach, you have a train wreck. And mom and dad are still having to bail them out. So I just think as coaches, we have to be careful to not do everything for them. That's why I love unstructured play. I'm a big fan. Like, I truly don't believe a kid should be in organized sport till they're 10 years old. I don't think we should compete, actually keep score till they're 12 years old. Mm-hmm. Truly, 100%. I think we would see the sports world skyrocket if we used a different model.
So, you know, you mentioned we've talked about this idea of struggle. I like how you brought up the kids there and just even the age appropriate consequences. It was just even yesterday, my daughter got to school and she decided that she didn't want the sandwich that I had made for her lunch. And she's 3.5. And literally the teacher messaged me, because I guess this is what they do now, is like, oh, can you bring her something else for lunch? Because she doesn't want to eat the sandwich. I'm like,
yeah.
And she's going to be hungry the rest of the day. I'm like, well, that's a struggle. She'll learn from that, you know?
I think I shared with you, my middle school daughter called me one day and said, Dad, you know, I forgot my lunch in your car. And I was like, okay, well, can you bring it to me? No, I'm not bringing it. You're not going to starve, yeah. You know? And that's not to say that I wouldn't show up one day and bring my kids something to school, yeah. But you have to, you have to strategically say there are things in life you have to learn. And the earlier you learn those things, the less the scars are smaller early.
Yeah.
If you wait till later, man, those scars are big.
Yeah.
And they're hard to heal.
We save them from the natural consequences far too often.
Yes.
When you were at UTC, you were coaching Division I athletes. What did this look like for you there as the wrestling coach? You know, there's obviously the struggle on the mat, and wrestling is one heck of a sport for showing them that type of struggle. But how did you let your players struggle? Because I think I think coaches struggle with this idea of, okay, I'm going to step back and I'm going to go hands off. I'm going to give them the autonomy. I'm going to let them struggle. Mm-hmm. But there's got to be still some underlying support through that. So what did that look like for you as a coach there?
Well, I just think you have to balance like bailing them out and making them step up to the plate. You know, because we value the extrinsic so much in coaching, it's easier if we bail them out, because then we don't risk the chance of not getting the result that we want. I mean, if we bench a good player, or we allow a good player to suffer a consequence, well, then it hurts us as a coach. And there's a fine balance there. And that's why I believe if we're waiting till high school and college to try to teach these things, we've probably missed our window. I'll be honest with you. We may have missed our window. And that's why I call the sport world today, I call it sport prostitution. We just pimp these kids out, holding them accountable for nothing, just using them for their skill. And we hope, you know, if I'm a 9-year-old coach, well, listen, I just want to get this kid through 9-year-old and then I'll pass him on. I don't care if he learns anything. I just want him to hit layups, or I want him to, you know, back cleanup or win wrestling matches. And so we just continue to delay the consequence of bad habits. And so I just wish somehow we could reverse that. And I think it's what all of us are trying to do here as we communicate these things, is to say, hey, what are the things a kid really needs to make it? And it's not, I don't know if you've ever seen this documentary. It's called In Search of Greatness. You got to go watch it, man. It deals with three people: Wayne Gretzky, Jerry Rice, and the soccer player Pele. Uh-huh. And one of the things they talk about in there is that they talk about these, and you got to set up environments where kids learn implicitly. You know, it's unstructured play, and they just figure it out. And we have robbed children of that. We have robbed kids of the opportunity to figure things out. Coaches at my level, and I know Nate's a high school coach and you were a high school coach, JP, that, you know, that we will say at those levels, well, kids today have no coping skills. Well, no joke. We never let them cope. Mm-hmm. You know, we never let them learn how to cope and manage things. And they used in this documentary, they used the illustration of, you don't have to teach a child to speak. You just put him in an environment where they learn how to talk. Mm-hmm. You don't sit a 15-month-old down and say, all right, now, today we're going to learn this. No, they just learn how to talk. And if they were exposed to five languages, they would learn all five languages. Well, in the sports world today, what we've done is we try to teach them everything so early, and we never let them learn. And then at 14, 15, 16, we say, well, they're just uncoachable. I'm like, they're not uncoachable. They don't know how to learn. We've never let them learn. They don't know how to think for themselves. So I don't know. I get so fired up about it, man. So fired up. I'm about to wrestle Nate right now in Iowa. Through the screen, through the phone.
Come on over. You know, a big part of our audience is high school coaches and some college level coaches, you know, and it's one thing to look at the system of how kids are being brought through, you know, the youth sports and grassroots levels to arrive at our doorstep when they're, you know, when they're freshmen or they get to that high school age. When you think about trying to encourage players or the kids that we're working with at this level to develop some of that struggle in a relationship context or in the responsibility context, you know, what kind of practical advice would you give for coaches that are getting kids, you know, that are arriving sort of just as you've described, without coping skills or emotional intelligence or struggle skills? you know, where do we start and how do we maybe change some of the things that we've structured to be able to help kids start to mature in those areas?
Well, the first thing you better do as a high school coach, I mean, and again, we're late. I mean, we've missed a big mark there if we're just now teaching this, but the first thing, it will never happen until you coach and educate their parents, because they're going to be your greatest resistance. And it's not because they're bad people. It's because they've created a habit of always bailing their child out. So you have got to build a bridge between the parent and yourself and the parent and the athlete to say, hey, we want to help your child become this individual. And it is going to require some sacrifice on all of our parts. There are going to be some moments that are tough. And we're going to have to walk through these things together. We've got to partner together. I mean, to me, I was doing a coaching, like a professional development in Nashville. And I mean, there was 500 coaches there, and they asked the coaches, what's the one thing you dread about coaching this year? Well, what was the most common answer?
I'm sure it was the parents. Yep.
Parents. Not only was it the most common answer, it was the only answer given. Well, what's sad is, parents are our greatest asset, but we are just so tired of dealing with them. We've almost just pushed them to the side. Well, we are the kids we coach, we're never going to be able to allow them to walk through those struggles until we get the parents on board, because it's totally opposite of what they've done the previous, you know, 10 years of their life. And that's why I'm not a fan of youth sport, because at 6 years old, the kids really do need their parent there if they're going to a ballpark. They got to have a ride. You know what I mean? So it almost creates this over-involvement from the parents, which ultimately hurts the coaches at the levels, you know, when the kids need to be playing sports. So, again, that's why I think, you know, from 5 to 10 years old, unstructured, unorganized play, let the kids figure it out. Less money, less time, less energy, and no one would be behind. No one would be behind. You know what I've discovered? The great athletes always emerge. They always emerge. In this documentary, In Search of Greatness, there's a lady from Boston College that talks about there's two things kids have in order to be a prodigy or an elite level athlete. It's a rage to master, and it's the ability to learn quickly. And I think we've robbed young people of the chance of the rage to master, because the rage to master really should begin at about 12 to 15 years old. Well, what we've done is we've tried to start that at like 6 years old. So by the time they're 13, they're just so over it. Whereas Wayne Gretzky was talking about, he never even played like travel hockey until he was 14. Was the first time his dad actually took him somewhere to like play. He played in his backyard, and he goes, I would play all the time, but no one told me to. I just had this rage to master. And so we do it so much, they become apathetic at the time they really should be pursuing it. It's a hard system right now. So I think high school coaches probably have it the hardest too.
I want to come back to the parents thing in a little bit, but I want to jump to the idea of, you got a player coming in to the college level. So there's a lot of college coaches listening to this podcast. How do they apply that? How do they start changing that? Because the reality is it's hard to find players out there that have been able to have that experience like you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, one, I think you got to look for it in your recruits. Sure. I mean, you've got to know what you're looking for. And then, I mean, I think if I could give one bit of advice, and I did a really good job here, and then I struggle here a little bit, of like, know what your standards are and don't waver. Like, be willing to suffer quickly versus suffering long term. Know the expectation, and if the kid doesn't meet the expectation, like, there has to be a consequence, and you better let them experience it early. If not, it's going to cost you at a very critical time. You're just delaying the inevitable. And hopefully by allowing that young man or that young lady to experience that consequence quickly, they're going to be teachable and coachable enough to overcome it. versus delaying it because we don't want to miss out on utilizing their skills because we feel the pressure, it will always bite you when it matters most. I mean, it will always get you when it matters most if you don't deal with it.
How did you communicate those standards at UTC and then enforce them with those guys? Like, what, you know, obviously that probably developed over time, but you probably started to really figure out a pretty good, strong system.
Well, initially I just had such a great coaching staff, man. I mean, you mentioned Rocco Mansueto. We were just so in sync with what we knew we wanted and we were after. It was just a lot of fun. And when it was hard to make when it was tough to make a hard decision, I had a coaching staff that backed me. Mm-hmm. So you have to make sure you surround yourself as a head coach with people that are bought in to your system of doing things, because the pressure will squeeze the worst out of us. I mean, we see it in athletes. When a pressure situation is there, it usually squeezes some bad juice out of us. And the same is true as coaches. I mean, we can't hold these athletes to a standard we don't have for ourselves. So we have to have people around us that will hold us accountable to not waver on those things that matter most to us, because we see the end goal. We see the end picture. We say in a lot of our trainings, I say this a lot on social media, don't get so consumed with what matters now, you lose sight of what matters most. And I think it's true in coaching is, you know, you get this moment and you know you should probably deal with this situation. There should be consequence, you know, but, you know, you don't want this kid to miss the game early in the season because you might lose the game. So you waver. Well, then it ends up costing you in a district or region or sub-state game later on. Whereas surround yourself with people that will hold you accountable and push you towards doing the right thing immediately.
So Nate, there's a lot we can take away from the first part of our conversation with Heath. What was the number one thing though that you got from that interview?
Well, I love the conversation about the struggle, you know, and allowing kids to struggle at their age level. You know, I love that quote where he said that struggle is age appropriate. You know, a six-year-old struggle has a six-year-old consequence. And it kind of reminds me of something that my friend Jim Huber shares at the parent meeting that he does with his teams. Was really encouraging the parents to not be the rescuer. He's working with high school athletes, and when they struggle, when they need to communicate with him, when they're not sure why they're not playing, when they're frustrated, he really wants them to come and talk to him, the athlete to come and talk to him. And the analogy that he makes with parents is when those kids are 25 and they have a job and they don't understand what their role is in their company, or they don't understand what the expectations are, if they don't have the skill to be able to initiate a conversation like that with their boss, what's at stake? Their livelihood is at stake, right? Like their ability to pay the bills. And if they can't pay the bills because they lost their job, because they have this difficult conversation, because they never learned how, then where do they end up? They're right back in their parents' basement, you know, which is what he tells them at the meeting. And I'm just reminded of that, you know, when he says the earlier you experience consequences and struggle, the smaller the scars. And I think as coaches, too often we rescue our kids and we don't allow them to be in a place where they can struggle to learn.
Yeah, and I think that's huge. I mean, I think that's comes back to something that I talk a lot about with coaches, which is not saving them from the consequences of their actions, you know. And I think, you know, he talks a little bit about accountability and making sure that we have a culture of accountability. And that's really, really important. There's two kind of consequences that I really try to dive into. One is the natural consequences, and then some of them are other kind of consequences that we maybe impose. And sometimes we just got to let kids experience some of those natural consequences of failing to work hard, of failing to put in the work in the off season, and they get to that season and they're just not in the position that they want to be, or they're not having that level of success they want. And then you have that conversation. It's not a conversation of "I told you so." It's a conversation of just helping them to reflect on why they're not experiencing the outcomes that they want. So often, I think, comes back to this idea that, you know, our kids say that they have a dream, they have some sort of aspiration, they have some sort of goal, and we really, really want them to achieve that. And when we see them not on the path towards achieving that goal or that outcome that we want, we feel like we have to go in there and fix it for them. And sometimes just the greatest lesson is that they just fall short of that goal, and that we're there with them not to call them out on it, but just to kind of keep calling them up as they move forward in their life.
Coaches, we know that the struggle is not limited to just our players or even our own children, but if you've been in coaching long enough, you've been through some seasons that can be rather difficult where we're not necessarily sure the right direction to go, or you don't necessarily have an outside perspective on the best way to move your program forward. And here at Thrive On Challenge, we offer a mentoring program just to walk alongside coaches in those seasons of struggle, not to solve your problems for you, but to be there as a resource, as a guide, and as someone that can help you when you go through difficult times. If you're interested in learning more, click on the link in the episode details or visit us at thriveonchallenge.com.